This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchlow, between 1 and 2 o'clock this afternoon. Plenty to be talking about on this Tuesday afternoon as we start the month of October. And before you know it, it will be Christmas. Celebrations all round, but plenty of football before then. We'll be looking back at last night's drab game at Old Trafford. Manchester United 1, Arsenal 1 is how it ended, but a supreme lack of quality in that game. And how far have Manchester United and Arsenal fallen? We'll be getting reaction to that game from Jamie Jackson, Manchester football correspondent for The Guardian. We'll also be looking ahead to tonight's Champions League action. Both Manchester City and Tottenham in action tonight. We'll be building up to those games. Tottenham, a tough game at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium tonight against German giants Bayern Munich. If you want to get in contact with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 70 20 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We're also on WhatsApp. This is the Premier League Fan Show here on Love Sport. So plenty of football to be talking about this afternoon. As I mentioned, we'll be looking ahead to the Champions League this evening. Obviously, the second round of group stage games kicks off tonight. Manchester City and Tottenham, the two English sides in action tonight. And then tomorrow night, we'll be seeing Liverpool in action and also Chelsea. But first, we'll look back at last night's game at Old Trafford. Obviously, it's always been feisty between Manchester United and Arsenal, especially during the Ferguson-Wenger era, and it wasn't a particularly great game, if we're being brutally honest. A supreme lack of quality in this game. If we're being brutally honest, Manchester United and Arsenal were absolutely awful last night. It was a rubbish game of football. You think these are two of the biggest clubs in this country, and yet the quality on show was awful. It really was. There was absolutely no quality on show, whether it be the clinical edge in the final third, whether it be simple passing between players, whether it was keeping possession. Both sides were just simply incapable of doing that, and it was an awful game of football in pretty kind of extreme weather. It was not particularly nice, as it usually isn't up in Manchester, but it was an awful, awful game of football. And I don't know whether either side would be particularly disappointed with a point. I think there was more pressure on Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and Manchester United going into this game, especially as they were the home side in this game. But you wonder how far away are they? These two sides are miles away from Manchester City and Liverpool at the top. They are light years. There is such a massive gap between the top two and the rest. I think Arsenal are probably slightly further ahead of Manchester United, but defensively, they're all over the place and they're not looking great. It's only the attacking side of their game and Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang that bails them out. An interesting question. If you put Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang into the Manchester United side, where would Manchester United be? Would they be a side that is a shoe-in to get into the top four? If you put an out-and-out goal scorer that scores 20-plus goals a season into that Manchester United side, you'd probably say they are going to be one of the third or fourth place sides this season in the Premier League. But it was a rubbish game of football. But as per usual at the start of this season, so many talking points from the game. It is the second successive Premier League game that realistically Arsenal have got away with not conceding a penalty. You think back to their 3-2 win against Aston Villa at home, where they were down to 10 men for over a half. They were very lucky not to concede a penalty in the second half, when I think it was John McGinn's shot hit, or Conor Hourihan's shot hit Socrates Papastathopoulos in the arm. And it was, I think they measured the distance, was about 8 metres. So it wasn't particularly close. But Socrates made no attempt to move his arm away. If anything, diverts his arm towards it to make sure it deflects out for a corner. And yet, not only does the referee not pick up on that, but VAR doesn't feel like it can pick up on it. And again last night, it definitely feels that Arsenal got away with one, and that may have meant that Manchester United would have taken all 3 points from that game. It was Sead Kolasinac on this occasion. There was plenty of distance between where the ball was struck and where it hit him. And although his arm wasn't necessarily out as much as, let's say, Luis Suarez in the World Cup against Ghana on the goal line, it was quite clearly a deliberate act to handle the ball. And yet neither the referee, Kevin Friend, who had a poor game last night, nor the VAR picked up on that. And this is just utterly ludicrous that they have so many caveats now in the laws of the game in this country for handball that you're seemingly never going to get given it. And yet sometimes handball gets given, sometimes it's not. And also, what really irritates fans is this inconsistency with the ruling depending on whether it's a defender or an attacker. We've seen Manchester City in the dying embers against Tottenham having a goal ruled out to deny them all 3 points because Aymeric Laporte handled the ball before Gabriel Jesus hit it in the back of the net. But yet, if it's a defender handling the ball, it needs to be the most obvious handball at the moment to be given a penalty. So it definitely feels like Arsenal got away with one there. Also, the VAR call. Now, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer wasn't happy after the game because although the whistle hadn't been blown until the ball was in the back of the net, and although it was correctly overruled, I mean, don't get me started on how the linesman doesn't see that Aubameyang is onside when Maguire stood right in front of him, quite clearly playing him onside. But the thing that was irritating Ole Gunnar Solskjaer was the fact that the linesman's flag was raised in the build-up and before the ball had gone in the back of the net. Now, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer claimed that Ashley Young perhaps would have got the block in on Aubameyang had he not seen that the flag had gone up. This goes back to the point of what you're told at the age of about six when you start playing football, is you play to the whistle. You play until the referee's whistle tells you to stop playing. Does Ole Gunnar Solskjaer have a point? Maybe he does, that if a linesman's flag is raised, then as a player, if you see that, you can see that the linesman's given that offside and that's the decision that's being made. But the key thing, which was ridiculous, Kevin Friend was also caught up in some controversy earlier in the season when he ruled out a goal for Aston Villa away at Crystal Palace, which should never have been ruled out. But the reason why the goal couldn't be given was because the whistle had already been blown before the ball ended up in the back of the net. So the ball was dead. The play was dead before the ball travelled into the goal. So I can kind of understand what Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's whinging about in terms of the flag going up. But at the same time, you play to the whistle and Kevin Friend hadn't blown his whistle until the ball had ended up in the back of the net. And yet again, Granit Xhaka proving what an awful player he is. He's been made captain of this side, which is an utter joke. Couldn't think of a kind of less appropriate player to be a captain, a leader, than Granit Xhaka, who is a rash, reckless player. But if you look back at Scott McTominay's strike from the edge of the box, it is utterly appalling and disgraceful that Granit Xhaka ducks underneath the ball. If he just sticks his head where it is, he doesn't even need to jump. If he just leaves his head where it is, it hits his head and doesn't go in the back of the net. But because he doesn't want to protect his precious little face, or probably his perfectly manicured hair that he spent probably a couple of hours doing, he denies himself the opportunity of denying Manchester United a goal. If he'd have just... I mean, it goes back to this point about modern-day players not wanting to kind of get themselves hurt or put their body on the line. That's an exact example of Granit Xhaka not wanting to get injured in order to stop a goal, because he should have headed that ball away, but instead looks pathetic. When you look at it from behind Scott McTominay's strike and you see Granit Xhaka just duck his head as the ball goes over him, it is utterly appalling to see a Premier League footballer doing that. But I think the overall review of the game was that it was awful. I think that's the perfect summary. And how far have these two former giants of the Premier League fallen that you look at how they're playing at the moment, these two sides are not going to get top four. And there's even a question to say, will they even get top six? That you look at Leicester are playing miles better than these two. Arsenal get bailed out by the fact they have Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, and he is the only reason that's between them qualifying for top four and being a team that's probably about eighth or ninth in the table. And Manchester United, they look okay defensively. They brought obviously Harry Maguire and Aaron Wan-Bissaka, who was missing last night, as was Luke Shaw. But up front, they've left themselves so short. Even though Romelu Lukaku didn't fit the style of play that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer wanted, He is a proven goal scorer, and they have left themselves massively short last night. Marcus Rashford didn't look fit at all. He looked nowhere near 100% fit, and that's a question we'll be asking later in this hour as to whether Marcus Rashford was 100% fit. But these two sides are miles off it. Liverpool have got the same amount as Manchester United, same number of points as Manchester United and Arsenal combined. Liverpool have 21 points out of a maximum 21 points at the start of the season in seven games. Manchester United have 9 points. Arsenal have 12. So Liverpool have as many points combined as Arsenal and Manchester United, and we're only 7 games into the season. There is such a massive gap between Manchester City and Liverpool at the top and the rest. There is such a huge gap, and last night 100% proved that. Looking ahead to some of the Champions League action, it is back for the second round of group stage games in the Champions League. Two English sides in action tonight. Manchester City host Dinamo Zagreb. City won comfortably in their first group stage game away at Shakhtar Donetsk by 3-0. You'd imagine it will be another easy win for City, even if they do make plenty of changes. Tottenham, it is a much harder game for them at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. They take on German giant Bayern Munich. That's also a 8 o'clock kickoff tonight. So a difficult game for Tottenham, who drew 2-2 away at Olympiacos in their first game, throwing away that 2-goal lead. Looking around some of the other games this evening, Real Madrid take on Club Brugge, and in the same group, Galatasaray are playing Paris Saint-Germain. Then Juventus take on Bayer Leverkusen. The other game in that group is over in Russia as Lokomotiv Moscow take on Atletico Madrid. Then in Manchester City's group, the other game is Atalanta versus Shakhtar Donetsk. Atalanta's first home game ever in the Champions League. Obviously, it's their first season in the competition. And in the other game in Tottenham's group, it is Red Star Belgrade, who lost 3-0 to Bayern Munich in their first game of the group stages at home against Olympiacos. As I mentioned, they drew 2-2 at home against Tottenham in their first game of the group. So plenty of Champions League action. There are two early kickoffs, 5-6, Real Madrid against Club Brugge and Atalanta against Shakhtar Donetsk. And then all the other games, including Manchester City's game against Zagreb and Tottenham's game against Bayern, are at 8 o'clock tonight. Liverpool and Chelsea in action tomorrow night in the Champions League. But plenty of interest. We'll be talking about Manchester City's game later in the show. We'll also be looking ahead to Tottenham's big game tonight against Bayern Munich. But up next, we'll be focusing on last night's drab contest, wondering what this means for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, what it means for Manchester United. Obviously, a short gap now between last night's game and their Europa League game on Thursday night away in Alkmaar. So we'll be talking all things Manchester United next. Love Sport. This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. If you want to get in contact with us, call us on 0208 70 20 558. We're going to continue looking back at last night's game at Old Trafford. Manchester United 1, Arsenal 1. And to help us look back, we're joined this afternoon by Jamie Jackson, Manchester football correspondent for The Guardian. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Jamie. I've already been talking about it being a lack of quality and a really poor game. But was actually last night's game a particularly big surprise that these two sides are way off, in particular the top two, and there is that massive gap between Manchester City and Liverpool and the rest?
So glad you asked that question, actually, Kieran, because that's what I was going to say. I don't think any of it is a surprise. So I actually thought the game, the start of it, there wasn't much incident, but I thought in the end it became a good contest in terms of, it went back and forth a bit. But no, I don't think it's any big surprise. I don't think, if you're looking at Arsenal, where they're at, where United are, and as you say, with regard to City and Liverpool, they are kind of like years behind at the moment. So I'm not completely sure why there's been such a massive kind of, Solskjaer's in trouble and, you know what I mean? Because I just think this is kind of what I expected. Most people did, really. I would have thought United to be at, it's the worst points accumulation since 1989. So that's something a little bit newish to sort of go at. But yeah, generally, I don't think it's that big a surprise at all.
Were there any positives that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer can take from last night? Some people were praising Axel Tuanzebe's performance, considering he was playing slightly out of position at fullback rather than at centre-back. Scott McTominay, some people felt, had a solid game at midfield, especially with a good strike from outside the box. Were there many positives or any positives to take from the game?
Yeah, no, I thought there was a few. I mean, it's interesting you mentioned Tuanzebe there, because until he gave away basically the ball for their goal, for Arsenal's goal, I thought he was one of United's best players, especially as it was his first league start, I think for 2 years. But, you know, that kind of fouled up his evening. Yeah, I thought McTominay was pretty impressive, really. I actually think in that player there, because if you noticed, he did keep on going to the end. And I know he fluffed a header that would have made it 2-0, I think, at the time. I don't think Arsenal had equalised them. He didn't let that bother him. And as I say, towards the end, he was still trying to drive United forward. I think they have actually got half a good player there, if I could put it that way. You know, he needs to do it consistently. I didn't think they were in the context of the game, not in terms of where they are with regard to City and Liverpool. I don't think United were that bad actually last night, as everyone said. They didn't lose the game. Okay, I know it's another draw. So yeah, McTominay. I think Daniel James, every time I see him, he plays well, which is what you want, obviously, isn't it? You know, for United or for any team that a player plays for. He looks a threat. Every time he gets the ball, I think the fans, whether you're opposition or United fans, and the opposition team think, oh, crumbs, what's going to happen here? I think he's a positive. Negatives, I don't know, United defensively weren't great. You know, with that back pass, he has got a few out, but, you know, injuries, unless you've got like sort of 10 frontline players, I don't think injuries can be used as an excuse. It's about having a proper squad. And beyond their first 11, 12, maybe as far as 13, I think the squad's pretty paper thin. Arsenal, to me, I don't watch lots of Arsenal, but I just don't get the Xhaka thing, because I'm not sure he should even be in the team. Whenever I've seen him play, and, you know, obviously I see him when he comes up here playing United City, and, you know, if I remember, did the odd Everton game, Liverpool game. I've always been baffled why he's in the team. You know, did he duck for the goal? It certainly looked like it. but I actually thought United, and maybe this is because I've got my United cap on because I cover them along with City, I actually thought United had the better of the game last night. I kind of agree with Solskjaer. You know, when he sort of said it was five or six performances where there's been promise. I get that, but you have to start finishing teams off. I don't think he's in any danger at the moment. I mean, football can be pretty loopy. Who knows what's around the corner? But I don't think, you know, there's any sense that he's going to be sacked or anything silly like that. But, you know, Rashford has a bit of a howler of a game, but then he creates the goal, the pass back to McTominay. You know, I don't know about Rashford, really. I think the jury's out. It has been for a couple of seasons. So it's a bit of a mixed bag. But, you know, to go back to the original point, I think this is what I was expecting United to be, you know, up and down. So, you know, I still expect them to get in and around that top four. I don't know if they'll finish top four, but I think, what, are they 10th at the moment? I think that's a little bit underselling where they will be. But, you know, I get the whole thing. It's Manchester United, 20 times Champions of England, the record. What is going on? But it's kind of been going on like this for years, really, since Ferguson went. So that's why it's not a great surprise.
You mentioned Daniel James's name there, and he's been one of the bright sparks for Manchester United at the start of this season. One thing that really surprised me, actually, about last night's game was how early Callum Chambers got a yellow card. He was playing at right back, yes, opposite Daniel James. That, considering, yes, the sheer pace that Daniel James has, were you shocked that Manchester United didn't just try and target Chambers, just give it to Daniel James, considering Manchester United aren't flush, yeah, with attacking talent, that they just didn't try and target Chambers and potentially get him that second yellow and sent off, and that could have been a way for Manchester United into this game?
No, it's a great call. I mean, it looked like that's what they were doing. Ergo, they got the yellow card early, as you mentioned, Kieran, and then he sort of dried up. I'm not sure he might have had one or two more attacks down that side, but you know, he kind of created the attack for United's equaliser, which was down the other side, wasn't the right hand side. So no, I agree with you. That looked, and maybe that's where, you know, Solskjaer, and if not Solskjaer, someone like Mike Feeling should be saying, look, you know, the guy should be booked. I mean, that's basic stuff. If you and I can see it, and probably most people watching that game, fans or not, you know, just neutrals, could see, oh, look, that's a weakness. Why did it not happen? You know, it was a little bit of a puzzle. But, you know, the thing with United for me is, at least the players they bought this summer, I think that it's the best free signings they've made as a group since Ferguson went. That might sound a bit of a, how can I say it, a bit of a sort of odd thing to latch on, you know, a bit sort of, not desperate, but a bit sort of looking positive. But I just think before it's been disjointed, I think there is actually a concerted effort now to get similar type players under this Solskjaer way of playing. But, you know, they need to execute it better.
And looking at Marcus Rashford, one thing that struck me, I was surprised actually when the lineups were announced that he took his place in the 11, considering some of the comments that Solskjaer was making in the build-up to the game. I was looking at some of the plays in particular in the second half when United were on the counter-attack and he was needing, usually we expect Marcus Rashford to have lots of pace. He's a quick forward player. Yeah. He did not look fully fit at all. Do you think it was a risk by Solskjaer to play him? And did you look at it and think this guy shouldn't really be starting?
Yeah, I kind of agree with you. I don't think he looks... I don't actually think he's looked 100% raring, you know, rapier speed for a little while now. So, yeah, I agree with you. But again, this is because probably the alternative was starting Mason Greenwood, who's a 17-year-old who, you know, they don't want to sort of overcook too early. And, you know, which the wider picture is the fact that, you know, what happened to the centre-forward, that, you know, replacing their top scorer, Lukaku, when he left. It's an interesting one, this. I can just go at this quickly. This thing about, you know, he said it again on Friday, Solskjaer, the build-up to this game. You know, Lukaku wanted to go. He knew it was his time to go. I get that. Except for Pogba wants to go. He seems to know it was time to go. And yet he's kind of, you know, the club, Solskjaer, really made the effort to make him feel wanted. And that's kind of where I think his management's fallen down a little bit. I get that he's not a Solskjaer, you know, first 11 player, Lukaku, but he's definitely a great option to have off the bench. And so why did they not say to him, look, you know, manage him better, a bit like they've done with Pogba, look, you're wanted, you look at all the games, you've got Europa League, you know, what it would have taken just to keep him here a season. And if that hadn't happened, at least replace the player with, you know, someone. There's talk of Mandzukic now. Well, he's, you know, I know he presses a bit more than Lukaku did, but was he 33, 34? Be a short-term thing if you do go for him in January. But I don't know, it's a little, that this is the one bit of business where I thought, nah, that's been a bit of a mistake. So that goes back to the Rashford thing you're saying. I think he kind of felt forced into, as you probably rightly say, taking a risk with him.
One of the bits of the game that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer wasn't particularly happy with was the way in which Arsenal scored that goal, not just in terms of the mistake that Tuanzebe made, but the fact that the linesman had raised his flag before the ball was in the back of the net, but Kevin Friend's whistle didn't go in before. He said that had the flag not gone up, actually, I might have been able to block Aubameyang's shot and it may not have gone in. What's your view on that? Do you think that the linesman should have delayed putting his flag up, or should Ashley Young actually be blamed for not just playing to the whistle and waiting to see what happened?
I think both scenarios are mistakes. So, you know, obviously it was proved to be really quite, you know, he's quite well onside, wasn't he? So he probably shouldn't have put it up. But at the same time, if you play to the whistle, you know, then it doesn't really matter what you know, the whistle obviously starts and stops the game. So if you play to that, then you can't ever be caught out like that. So Ashley Young's the captain. He's, what, 32, 33? He's been, you know, he was a member of England's World Cup semi-final team. You know, he's a storied, experienced, you know, garlanded player. He should know a little bit better than that, really. You know, a professional at an elite club. But for me, play to the whistle, really. Then that way, if a linesman makes a mistake, like obviously happened last night, then you're not going to be caught out by it. So that was a bit disappointing, really.
Looking ahead then to Manchester United's next game, it's a quick turnaround. Obviously, Thursday night, they're in Holland to take on AZ Alkmaar. Mm. Does this just further highlight the kind of ridiculous nature of the Premier League? That they don't really kind of prioritise their teams. They don't really care about how they do in Europe, because Manchester United and Arsenal played at 8 o'clock last night.
Yeah.
They're both in action on Thursday night in the Europa League. It just seems utterly ludicrous that that's the case.
No, it is. No one's really from the sort of Premier League... you know, the authorities haven't really given a sort of well-reasoned answer as to why this goes on. If I can give you another example, I'm at the City Zagreb game this evening, and Zagreb, who are the champions of Croatia, played on Friday, and what we're now Tuesday, so there you go, they've had the whole weekend off after the Friday game. I'll be honest, I'm not completely sure when Malcolm and I last played, but I bet you it wasn't Monday or Sunday. I bet it was Saturday. I wouldn't be surprised if it was a Friday, because I know that in Holland they do clear fixtures or sort of, you know, give space. So I agree with you. I don't quite understand why. You know, if it's all about the brand, which the Premier League always likes to sort of promote, then surely if your team is doing well in Europe, that obviously promotes English football. And the way you do that is you give them a little bit of help, as we're discussing, by, you know, staging it on a Sunday. You know, then they would have had 3 or 4 days off. So it is a little bit crazy. I'm really fascinated to see what happens at Alkmaar, because with this United team, kind of basically, apart from the Mourinho season when they finished second, it's kind of been the case since Ferguson left, which I always refer to because it's kind of, well, we're in this sort of post-Ferguson era. You never know what's going to happen with United. So they could go to Alkmaar and get beaten, I don't know, 2-0 or 2-1, or they could go there and maybe win 3-0. So, you know, let's wait and see. But yeah, you're right. It's, what is it, two or three days, and then they're playing again. I'm not sure. It'd be interesting if Rashford makes the trip.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Jamie. That was Jamie Jackson, Manchester football correspondent for The Guardian, giving his views on that drab game at Old Trafford last night. Lacking in quality and a quick turnaround for Manchester United, it does seem rather silly that both Manchester United and Arsenal were in action last night and then back in action on Thursday night in the Europa League. There was only one game on Super Sunday on Sunday. Why on earth was that game, especially a massive game like that, why was it played on a Monday night, not on a Sunday afternoon, especially considering both sides are in European action this week? We're going to be turning our attention to the other side of Manchester, the blue side of Manchester City. They come up against Dinamo Zagreb in the Champions League at the Etihad Stadium tonight. So we'll be talking all things Manchester City next.
This is Love Sport.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Crutchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. If you want to get in contact with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp, so we want to hear from you this afternoon. If your club is involved in European action, whether it be the Champions League with Manchester City, Tottenham, Liverpool and Chelsea in action, in the Europa League, Manchester United, Arsenal or Wolves, or talk about your Premier League club's starts of the season, make sure you get in contact with us this afternoon here at Love Sport Radio. Obviously, plenty of Champions League action to look forward to tonight. 8 of the 16 group stage games take place tonight. The other 8, obviously, tomorrow night. Looking through the games, 2 early kickoffs, 5 to 6 kickoffs. Real Madrid away at Club Brugge, and also Atalanta take on Shakhtar Donetsk. Those are both 5 to 6 kickoffs UK time. And then at 8 o'clock, plenty of games to be looking forward to. Galatasaray take on Paris Saint-Germain. Tottenham against Bayern Munich is a pretty big contest at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium tonight. Manchester City play Dinamo Zagreb, the Croatian champions, at the Etihad. Juventus take on Bayer Leverkusen. Red Star Belgrade are up against Olympiakos. And Lokomotiv Moscow take on Atletico Madrid. One of the games I mentioned there, one of the English sides in action, it takes place at the Etihad Stadium tonight. Manchester City host Dinamo Zagreb. It's an 8 o'clock kickoff. And to look ahead to that game, I'm delighted to say we're joined by David Mooney from the Blue Moon podcast. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, David. Looking at this, you would expect it to be a pretty easy win for Manchester City, although Dinamo Zagreb did win 4-0 in their opening group stage game against Atalanta. How tough a task do you think this is going to be for Pep Guardiola's side?
Yeah, I honestly don't know, to be honest with you. I think part of the problem that City have with this fixture is that we still don't really know a lot about Zagreb or Atalanta beyond that opening game in the Champions League, if that makes sense. We don't know if Atalanta are the whipping boys of the group and Zagreb just did what they should do, or if Zagreb are actually a really good team and Atalanta are quite a tough team and, you know, they've handed out a right spanking. So I think it'll be it's kind of a tough test in that sense. The flip side of the coin, though, is the fact that City won their opening game and, you know, win this game this evening, and that's the group pretty much in their control from there on in. So there's a big prize on offer, really, for it. In terms of how tough it'll be, I suspect it would be tougher if City were at Zagreb than if they were at the Etihad tonight.
One man that is a doubt for tonight's game is Kevin De Bruyne. He went off quite late on in the game against Everton. Looked like he was limping a little bit. Considering the depth that Manchester City have and considering it isn't, let's say, against Barcelona, for example, is it not worth the risk at all to play De Bruyne? Would you completely rest him to make sure he's fully fit when the Premier League comes around, considering it may be just a little bit of a risk to play him?
I've always of the school of thought that if anybody's not fully fit, then they don't play, and you know, you kind of deal with it. And I think you think back to I think it was the season before last when City got 100 points. There was the talk of Aguero at the start of that season. He was involved in that car crash, and you know, the talk was that they would rush him back to fitness because it was ahead of the game with Chelsea, and ultimately, you know, Guardiola didn't do that, and Guardiola just trusts that he's got players who can move around and can cope with the absences here and there. Let's be honest, City's squad is You know, you look at Liverpool's squad and you would say a couple of injuries to Liverpool's squad and they're going to struggle in the Premier League. A couple of injuries to City's squad. They still went and won three trophies last season. So I do find it's difficult to sit here as a City fan and moan about what injuries they've got, because, you know, quite rightly, fans of other teams will turn around and say, well, you have got a team that is worth billions. So, you know, you don't really have the right to moan about it. De Bruyne will be a big miss. If the rumours, it's not been confirmed by the club because they're still testing it, but it seems like he's got some sort of groin strain. How serious that is, we don't know. It doesn't feel like it's one of those that will keep him out for a long, long time. But while City's biggest injury problems are in defence at the minute, anyway, I don't think losing De Bruyne is going to change the problems that City have with injuries. It's all about Stones and Laporte that are the problems at the minute.
Obviously, Manchester City still won the Premier League last season, even without Kevin De Bruyne for most of it. One man that is in fine form at the moment is Riyad Mahrez, who seems to be rediscovering his form at Leicester. He's had a bit of a kind of in and out time because he's not a constant starter for Manchester City. Maybe that's a reason why he hasn't quite played as well as he was doing at Leicester. But are we starting to see the Leicester form for Mahrez come through? And do you think at the moment, with the current form he's got, he is a guaranteed starter when Guardiola is picking his best 11?
I think at this stage, he would certainly be one of the first names on the team sheet. For me at the minute, he's in City's strongest front three. He's been an absolute revelation this season. It started with that opening day at West Ham, where I think he was involved in four of the goals. It's that long ago that I forget, but he's been a constant this season. When last season he was really struggling. I think last season, you know, we kind of have to give him a lot of leeway, because it's not easy coming into a Pep Guardiola team. We've seen it from other players that have joined City and other players that have joined Pep's teams. You don't just slot straight in, and people this season have been pointing at Rodri and saying he's slotted straight in. Well, he has to an extent. There are some issues with how Rodri has settled in that he's still ironing out at this stage. And also, he's the anomaly. Not many players do it. He's every now and then somebody will be able to do it, and it turns out that Rodri is one of them. For Mahrez, it took him quite a while to settle in, and then he went and missed that penalty at Anfield, which I think it's certainly weighed down on him for a long time last season. And I think, you know, the summer he had with Algeria, and, you know, the scoring on the final day to put the game beyond doubt against Brighton last season, I think really helped him. And I think he's really reaping the rewards of that this season.
In terms of Manchester City's defence, then, I think Pep Guardiola said that, especially as Fernandinho is now 34, he won't necessarily be able to play three games or start three games in a week. So will we see potentially Rodri drop into the back four alongside Otamendi tonight? Or is that a case of maybe on the weekend against Wolves that we could see a slight change at centre-back?
No, I'd be surprised if it changes. I think it'll be Fernandinho both times. Just for getting through this period, there's an international break coming up, and I think John Stones is due back after that, so then give it a couple of weeks after that, and Fernandinho's back to his previous role of kind of defensive cover and being the option in midfield. So I think for the time being, I think his partnership will be Otamendi and Fernandinho. I don't see any reason why you would a player like Rodri, who I just said he was settling in and getting to grips with the role, why you'd want to kind of throw him around the team and confuse all that. The only other option is maybe he promotes Eric Garcia for some of the time if he's on the bench and the games against Zagreb and Wolves are, I'm not going to say won, but are close to being won, then you might see Garcia come on to kind of give Fernandinho a little bit of rest. But the same can be said of Otamendi as well. Otamendi is the only fit centre back, so you might want to wrap him up in a bit of cotton wool as well.
In terms of changes then for tonight's game, do you think we might see a rotation of the full-backs, the likes of Benjamin Mendy and João Cancelo, come in? How many changes do you think that Guardiola will be looking to make? Will it just be a couple of changes just to freshen things up, or will he be looking to make deeper changes to this side as they obviously try to juggle Champions League and Premier League action?
I honestly couldn't tell you. Trying to predict what Guardiola does is nigh on impossible. The only thing that I can say is that he probably won't go unchanged from the weekend because obviously with injuries anyway. But he very rarely goes unchanged in his teams. I would expect Aguero to come back in for Jesus. My hunch is that he is maybe prioritising the Champions League a little bit more than he has done in previous years. In previous years, it was Jesus who was the kind of starting striker for the Champions League groups. I suspect it's Aguero this time around, just for where the club's priorities lie. And that's a whole other conversation comparing the club's priorities and the fans' priorities. Mendy's an interesting one. Mendy, he looks back to something like what we expect from him, but it's difficult to shake off the fact that he's had 2 years of serious injuries. So he's not one that you want to just chuck back into the deep end and get him playing. It was a real big surprise that he started against Watford. And, you know, from then on in, it was no surprise that he actually went off at half-time and hasn't been featured since. I think he's one of those players that you just want to see him playing again regularly. It doesn't matter. You're not asking for more than get yourself fit and get on the pitch. So I suspect he won't come in just for the sake of easing him back in. If City are to make a change at fullback, it's probably going to be Angelino. But again, my hunch, I'd say you're looking at probably Zinchenko on the left, and you know maybe Cancelo, maybe Walker on the right. I don't know about that one at all.
And just finally, then, David, is it a case of how many for Manchester City tonight, or do we perhaps need to show a little bit more respect to Zaga, and it may be a little bit harder than that?
I'm always up for showing respect because there was a lot of people who thought it was how many against Norwich, and then it was clear that they needed four against Norwich that they weren't able to do. So, I'm a City fan of good vintage. I started in the 90s, and I think any City fan from that time would be just the very idea that you could ever go into a game thinking how many will City score today would be a blessing. So I think, City usually score. They are one of the best attacking sides that I've ever seen in person. So I think I think they've got a very, very good chance tonight. But you know what? Upsets happen. So they really don't need to take their eye off the ball.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, David. That was David Mooney from the Blue Moon podcast, looking ahead to Manchester City's Champions League group stage game tonight against Dinamo Zagreb. Obviously, Liverpool are in action tomorrow night in the Champions League. They host Red Bull Salzburg. Jurgen Klopp has just been having his press conference ahead of that game. Some team news, injury news to bring you from that press conference. Jurgen Klopp has confirmed that Alisson will not play. He is not fit enough to play against Salzburg tomorrow night. He's got a chance of playing against Leicester on the weekend, and he's 100% fit. He will be for the Manchester United game, which is post the upcoming international break. So some positive news on the injury front for Alisson. Jurgen Klopp has confirmed, though, that Joel Matip is out of tomorrow night's game. He's also a doubt for the weekend's game against Leicester. Jurgen Klopp also confirming that Jordan Shaqiri will also miss tomorrow night's game against Red Bull Salzburg. Liverpool host Salzburg at Anfield tomorrow night in the Champions League. Another of the English sides in action tonight is Tottenham. They host German giants Bayern Munich. Obviously, Munich winning their first game 3-0 against Belgrade. Tottenham throwing away a 2-goal lead away at Olympiacos to draw 2-2. So we'll be looking ahead to that game next. Love Sports. This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. If you want to get in contact with us, call us on 0208 70 20 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp, so we want to hear from you this afternoon. Obviously, plenty of Champions League action to be looking forward to tonight. We've already been talking about Manchester City's game at home against Dinamo Zagreb. Real Madrid are in action against Club Brugge. Galatasaray against Paris Saint-Germain. Juventus play by Leverkusen. Atalanta against Shakhtar Donetsk. Red Star Belgrade host Olympiakos. And Lokomotiv Moscow play at home against Atletico Madrid. Also Tottenham in action. 8 o'clock kickoff at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium against Bayern Munich. Tottenham threw away a 2-goal advantage. Goals from Harry Kane and Lucas Moura gave them a 2-0 lead, but they threw it away to draw 2-2 away in Greece. Bayern Munich, their opponents, beat... they beat Red Star Belgrade 3-0 at home. So a difficult game for Tottenham tonight. It feels like a crunch game, really, because Tottenham are at home. So there's the emphasis on them to really to really go and get a good result tonight. I don't think there's as much pressure on Bayern Munich to get all 3 points. For them, actually, I think a point wouldn't be a bad point. But after Tottenham drew 2-2 away in Olympiacos, it does put a little bit more pressure on Spurs tonight. They're the home side. Obviously, it'd be slightly different if it was in Munich at the Allianz Arena. But tonight, there is that emphasis, that focus on Tottenham at home to really go and make a statement tonight. Tottenham have actually done fairly well in Champions League home games over the last few years. They've played the likes of Real Madrid, Borussia Dortmund, at home, but this is going to be a test tonight for Tottenham. They've gone through a troublesome few weeks, and it will certainly be a big test for them against Bayern Munich, the German champions, the German giants tonight. The likes of Philippe Coutinho making his return to England has started his career at Bayern Munich pretty well. So a big test for Tottenham tonight in the Champions League. They're on 1 point. Bayern Munich, after their win against Red Star Belgrade, are on 3 points. To look ahead to that and some of the other Champions League action, I'm joined by producer Laurie in the studio. Let's start with that game then. Tottenham against Bayern Munich. What's a good result for Tottenham tonight? Because they picked up a point, but they should have picked up all three points in their first game against Olympiacos. They're at home. Does that put more of an onus on them to get all 3 points from tonight's game?
I think so. What's that new stadium for, these big European occasions? And I think they really need to make the most of it. I'm guessing the atmosphere will be really good. And look, Tottenham haven't been in the best of form or the most consistent form, but with the squad that they have, they should be thinking in these home games in the group stages, even if it's against Bayern Munich, that they want to go in and win those games. So yeah, I think even a draw would be, it wouldn't be a disastrous result by any stretch of the imagination, but I think given that they're Champions League finalists from last season, they're at home, I think that, you know, they should really be going all out for 3 points.
It was a bit of a summer of transition for Tottenham's opponents tonight, Bayern Munich. Obviously, they've been a giant of European football for so long, but they lost, or Arjen Robben and Frank Ribery left over the summer. Mats Hummels went back to Borussia Dortmund. They've seen new players come. They signed Lucas Hernandez and Benjamin Pavard at the back. They then brought Coutinho and Perisic in late during the window. Are they still in a very, very much a transitional period, that they most simply aren't the team they were 4 or 5 years ago, where they were one of three teams, really, that you thought it's going to be one of those sides that's going to win the Champions League? And they're a side that, even though they've still got good players, world-class players, they are nowhere near what they were.
Yeah, that is probably true. I'd still actually probably back Bayern over a team like PSG to probably go further in the competition. Just because they just seem to have that winning identity, which, you know, is a thing that some teams just seem to have in Europe. And nobody really wants to play Bayern Munich, even if it's, yes, a slightly lesser squad than maybe a couple of seasons ago. In terms of the new signings, I mean, Coutinho has really started to play quite well for Bayern now. He looks more like what we would have thought of as Coutinho when he was at Liverpool. And I think that's actually going to be a really astute signing. You know, they've actually made a bit of a had a bit of success signing players from other teams on the kind of peripheries, on loan or whatever. You know, they did the same with James Rodriguez.
They've done quite a lot. They've done Douglas Costa, who they sent out then on loan to Juventus. They've had Serge Gnabry that didn't work out at Arsenal. Kingsley Coman, who didn't work out at PSG. So that they have done that quite a lot, and the loan system baffles me in Europe. They just do it like it's willy-nilly, whereas our clubs never like doing loan deals, do they?
Sure, and you hear about these weird, like, three-year loans, and you're like, what is that about? Yeah, I think, you know, we talk about Juventus's transfer policy as well, where they've signed all these players on the free, and you do sometimes think, how are English teams wasting so much money on absolute dross? But kind of going back to the point, you know, by no means are Bayern Munich going to be pushovers. But having said that, you could say if there's a time to play them or a season to play them, maybe you would much prefer to play them now than, say, 3 or 4 seasons ago. But they definitely have problem players. They definitely have danger men. And Serge Gnabry likes to score in important games as well. So, you know, I think that he's going to be a really important player too.
Looking at some of the other games tonight, it looks like a night where there are going to be quite a lot of what we'd expect as normal results. There aren't that many big games in tonight's Champions League. Real Madrid host Club Brugge, Galatasaray against Paris Saint-Germain, Juventus at home against Bayer Leverkusen, Atalanta against Shakhtar, Red Star Belgrade against Olympiacos, and Lokomotiv against Atletico. Are there any games there that maybe could be surprise results, or are we looking at them all and thinking Real Madrid will win, PSG will win, Juventus are going to win, Atletico and Madrid are going to win? Is it all going to be plain sailing?
Well, maybe Galatasaray at home against PSG, because their summer was absolutely unbelievable. I mean, if you look at the players that they signed in that transfer window, it's absolutely ridiculous. I mean, like, just Falcao and Nzonzi is a pretty good haul, but they had 10 or 12 kind of formerly top players. So I don't think that they're going to be terrible. And going to these big teams in Turkey is always really intimidating for teams. And so I could potentially see Galatasaray getting a result in that one. Weirdly, I'm not quite as confident as everyone else is about Man City. I'm not saying that they're going to lose 6-0, but I think that if they lose a goal, you know, they can become a bit uncertain. And particularly in Europe over recent seasons, they've had some bad results where they've ended up drawing games and they've been quite high scoring because they concede early on. And I mean, let's see, but I think potentially they could be slightly more vulnerable at the back than you think, and might slightly underestimate Dynamo Zagreb. Obviously, there's a gulfing class between the two teams. I'm not disputing that. Man City are within the top three best teams in Europe, I'm sure. But, you know, there's also an element of that, yeah, they're probably going to get through. So these games don't always matter as much to them as they do to the teams who might be vying for that kind of other place.
I didn't ask David Mooney this, but Pep Guardiola made some quite strong comments in his press conference yesterday about if he doesn't win the Champions League at Manchester City. Quite drastically, he said he won't kill himself, which would be is quite a weird thing to say, because that is quite extreme. But how much pressure is Pep Guardiola under to win it? Because he doesn't tend to last more than 3-4 years at a club. And so you'd think maybe he's coming towards the end of his experience and then wanting to go on to somewhere else. And will that taint how people view this Manchester City side if this team under Guardiola, how fantastic it is, 198 points across the last two seasons in the Premier League, if they don't go and win the Champions League?
I think it's more likely to taint Guardiola than it is the Man City side, because I don't think anyone can dispute the type of football that they're playing is phenomenal, and clearly Guardiola has a massive part in that. Having said that, he's now been at two top teams with squads that, looking at them, should really have been able to get further than they did in the Champions League. And obviously he won it with Barcelona, and I think that's always going to be the criticism, that if he doesn't win it with City, he's not going to be able to shake that, well, because you haven't got Messi, you can't do it in Europe. So I think that he will be the one who'll receive the criticism. And let's be honest, it's not going to be criticism in the way that certain managers would come for criticism. But it's just kind of a what if, maybe the one element where he's not unbeatable. You know, last season they had that opportunity to win the quadruple, which would have been, was it last season or the season before?
See, last season, yeah.
So, you know, that obviously would have been an incredible achievement. And listen, there's no reason why they won't go on and win it this year. But it is odd, particularly the last two seasons, the way Manchester City have gone out, both against English opposition. You kind of think that they're the teams that they don't need to play, because playing a team from England in a Champions League game, or even in any cup game really, is just a completely different dynamic of fixture, and it becomes almost more of a psychological battle than it is about footballing prowess. And I think City are probably better than most of what we would call top sides in Europe, but when you play these other English teams, which also probably don't play as good football as Man City, there's just that added psychological impact that just makes it a bit more difficult.
You'd imagine it will be an easy win for Manchester City tonight against Zagreb, but the pressure does ramp up the further and further they go.
This is Love Sport.